Okay, we're on page 56. I'm just not feeling well. Anyway, all right. B'chol boker, on every morning. All right, you okay? Right now, so now he said that the previous two pages he discussed setting up this notebook with 4 13-week sections for each of the 13 traits that he says you should be working on. He said you shouldn't be working on more than 13 traits because tefasta meruba lo tefasta. You know, you don't grab too much. So you only work on 13 things at a time. I also mentioned, I think last week or maybe before, that my Rebbe said that our Mesorah, that our tradition, is not like this, and that it's based on Rabbeinu Yonah, and it was also discussed by Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, and that is that a person should devote more effort to those things that he's good at or that he's best at than things that he's weakest at. So the seichel, you know, the intuition would be that self-improvement is best accomplished by zeroing in on the things that a person is deficient in, that, you know, he needs work with. So that's the approach that the book favors, that you should work on those things that you need work on. But my Rebbe said that our tradition is based on Rabbeinu Yonah, which says that you can make more headway with things that you're weak in by focusing on things you're strong in. Is that what you understand?
It's amazing because
like you're always working on the things that you can't do well, but if you work on the things that you're really good at, everybody has things that they're best at, better than everybody else. There's some little thing that I do very well. So you pick a few of those things, you have to be honest, and I guess, you know, people might think that they're great at a lot of things that they're not, but there are a couple things that we are great at. So those things should be part. He told me, my Rebbe told me, that if you're going to work with the system, you should make as part of the 13 weeks some of the things that you're very strong at. I'm not sure, but he might have even indicated like he could do the same thing more than once in the 13 weeks. So let's say, for example, if somebody's an extremely friendly person, so there's a chazal that says, excuse me, have a makabel as kol adam b'sefer panim yafos. And when you see somebody, you should greet him warmly. How many of us do that? You know, it depends if you want something from the guy, you know, if he's your boss, if you need him for something, depends if he's an important person. But just a person, because he's a person, to greet them warmly, you know, it's not so easy to do. So let's say if I'm very friendly, I like everybody, and that comes natural to me, so I should work on that and make it even more perfect. My own personal experience with doing that is that the SIMP system that he has doesn't work so well for that, of judging negatives, because like he's saying that the things that he in his system are working only on negatives, so he says you make points for each time you violate the negative. So if your thing is b'sefer panim yafos, let's say, so you don't have negatives, you don't really have violations of it, so it doesn't, there's going to be nothing to keep track of if all you have are the negatives, because basically this is your thing, this is what you're great at. So, at one time I tried to work something out that maybe it's like the lack of the positives. Like you could have done a little extra and you didn't do it, so that's a point. You know, because he talks about making dots every time you did something not right. So for the strong things, not right might be not doing something extra special when I could have. With the bad things, it's violating it. Let's say if a fellow is angry all the time, you know, he gets angry, he talks not nicely. So every time he talks not nicely, he gives himself a point, you know, and then he has this whole system of that the points start to recede after a while. But the point would be not doing it, you know, terrific. Sorry, so what were you going to say?
I'm going to say that in academics, you want to focus on what you're weak on. If you're a teacher and a student, you know, you don't want to the kid's weak in a certain subject, you don't want to just focus on his good subjects.
You don't want to just subject on his good subjects. But I think it's probably also true that if they focused more on what he's good at, not just what he's bad at, it could be that would be a bigger impetus for him to work on what he's bad at. Because what happens is all he hears from the school, the only thing he gets attention for is being bad. And if you would tell him, you're terrific in this, he feels great, but then he realizes he's got something bad, so, you know, it might be more easy to motivate him that way.
You get a tutor for somebody, it's usually in that area where he's weak,
That's because they weren't fortunate enough to come to the shir. See, that's why such things happen, you know. But if you know this, I know that, I mean, it's kind of related to this. It's sort of the same idea, or a cousin of this idea, not exactly the same thing, but my late father-in-law, Zichrono Lebracha, was a very distinguished Rav. So he once said that he died over 20 years ago. I don't remember, I don't know exact time, 20 some years ago. So he said once or twice, I seem to remember him saying that the world has come to the realization that students with problems need help. So it used to be that if someone had a learning disability, so they, you know, they punished them, they demoted them, they just didn't treat them well. Now, with greater enlightenment, to a certain extent, they say if a child is weak in something, he needs extra help. My father-in-law said that they don't get that someone who's very gifted also needs help. Because what happens is that if someone is very gifted and they plunk him in class with people that aren't gifted, so
you can continue that question.
So he said that what usually happens is that the child develops, or can happen, they develop bad study skills, they become fidgety, they don't have concentration. I know, let's just say someone's child that I know, is a very smart little kid, he's in second grade, they're learning addition of double numbers, like 22 and 36. How much is it? So this kid does it in his head. He doesn't even have to carry the numbers. Very smart kid. So there's two kids like that in the class, and he was acting out in the math, you know, the math thing. So the teacher gave him the book, and he put them aside and said, do the book. So after a few weeks, the two kids finished the book. They got all the way to the end of the book, and then they said, what should we do? So the teacher is giving them assignments, giving them this, making busy work for them, but he's not really challenging them intellectually. The truth of the matter is, it's a terrible shame, because that child could be, he could discover a cure for something, he could be a great Rav, he could be a great leader, but he has to first be normal. To really, especially, maybe to discover a cure, you could be crazy. But to be a leader of people, you have to be normal. That helps not to be crazy. But, you know, if a kid gets to the point that he gets to class and he knows it, you know, he's got a real problem there. Whereas if he was kept busy at his level, and, you know, and then he plays that recess with the kids in his class, there you got something. It's not quite the same thing, because what the Cheshbon Nefesh is talking about, or Yisrael Salanter is talking about, is the stronger or weaker points within the same personality. This is talking about this person and that person, but anyway, I might have already said this. It's a bad thing about making recordings, you know. Yeah, you said that 2 weeks ago. 3 weeks, I don't remember. Anyway, okay, so now he now talks about page 58. He's going to talk about the actual activity of doing tikkun amidos. Now he says that he seems to have said you have to have 13 chapters on the 13 traits that you're doing. Whether they be weak traits or whether they be strong traits, you have to have chapters. Now, he has his own chapters. But for us, unless we use the 13 traits that he has to find something on that subject, it's best to just pull something out of a book of Musar that has a chapter on this and this character trait. A lot of the books of Musar, the way they work, the classical works, like Orchos Tzaddikim, for example, Orchos Tzaddikim, it has a section on this trait, on that trait. There are a couple of other svarim that go back centuries and centuries, you know, classics of Torah, that talk about certain things. So you isolate that thing, maybe make a copy of it, and that becomes your chapter for that trait. So he said before, you have to know all the chapters, then all the chapters have to be reduced to like a long phrase, one sentence, and the sentence has to be reduced to a word. And the word, and then he said, and you review it, and you review it, until you, just by saying the word, you think about everything. Now that takes a tremendous amount of work. You know, he's talking about a different generation, maybe, or people learn more Torah, they were able to do these things. Well, we can do it, but it's a heck of a lot of work. Not saying it shouldn't be done, but that is the system that he has. So he says, during the week that it's the week of that trait, so you should review that word, but you have to know stuff well enough so that when you say the word, it's evocative of the sentence, which is evocative of the whole chapter. So I don't know how many times you have to learn something until you get to that level of familiarity with the thing, like to know it inside and out. You know, maybe you have to review the chapter 50 times before you know it so well. Like you have to see the chapter like it was, you know, on a screen in front of you. And then when you see the sentence goes through. Let's say, you know, and you'd organize it in your head into five sections. And then you have like a 10-sentence word or a 15-word sentence with each, you know, two or three words, go through the different steps. And then you have one word that somehow summarizes all that. And you get it so well that when you do the word, you know, it reminds you of everything. And this is even before you start. But then during the week, you even though you know it so well, then you have to start reviewing it, and reviewing it, and reviewing it, and reviewing it. And this is a very, fundamental facet of the whole, the whole self-improvement program of the Musar movement, and that is that things which are known to you don't impact upon the person. Things that are known to us don't impact upon us by virtue of the fact that we know them. They only impact upon us by virtue of the fact that you review them repeatedly and you emotionalize it. So let's say if I have a temper, and under certain conditions I lose my temper. It's predictable. You could, a certain situation developing. In 7 minutes and 20 seconds later, the guy's going to be yelling his head off. Or he'll be out of control. Or he'll at least be saying things that he wouldn't otherwise say because he's angry. That happens, given that set of stimuli, it happens time and time again. And then say he reads something that says it's bad to lose your temper. Like the Rigaris Ramban says, Kol HaKoes Kol Bnei Gehenim Sholtim Bo. Anyone who gets angry, all forms of hell rule over him. That doesn't matter. Because when the urge to get angry wells up within you, that's an emotional thing. It clouds the reality. You see things differently, and this becomes the right thing to do. The only antidote to that is to emotionalize the idea that anger is bad, and to create a comparable emotional state about negating, you know, a counterforce against the anger. Then God helps if you try, and with God's help, you can make a dent in your anger. So his program is that during that week, you see that word over and over and over again. He said it's like someone is whispering it into your ear at all times. You see it in your face, in front of you. You think of times. You try to engineer opportunities, so you have an opportunity to act out the lesson inherent in this chapter. But it's review and review and review and review and review and review, and then and then you keep track of it and so on and so forth.
Yes, so that fits in a lot with the other practice of Musar, which is that you fervently review a text over and over.
Right. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter had a special system where he said that people should review it and with a certain amount of melody.
There's a word.
Musar v'hispilus is the word.
Hispilus, right.
Hispilus means with arousal. So Rabbi Yisrael, in his lifetime, he tried to set up houses of Musar where people would go just for no other purpose other than to study Musar. Like it was a type of a Beis Medrash in yeshiva just for studying Musar, and it was a place that people went during the day to, sit and examine themselves and say over these things, do self-analysis and learn Musar b'spilos.
Would they usually be in a hafruta or by themselves?
By themselves. This part is done by yourself because it's just an emotionalizing of something. There isn't, as far as I know, there's only one of those places left in the world. The idea did not catch on. The only place that's left, as far as I know, and I don't think they use it for that, is a place in Yerushalayim where students, Talmidim from that part of the world who were under Rabbi Yisrael Salanter's influence, came to Yerushalayim. And someplace, I think, in Mei Sharm, or around Mei Sharm, there's a place that they still call the Beis HaMusar. Beit HaMusar. That's a place where they have, I don't think they do it so much anymore. But what did catch on is that, and this caught on almost universally, is that in the great Lithuanian yeshivas, they would set aside like a 20 minutes, a half an hour a day from the study session to study Musar and to study it with a melody. So when I was in yeshiva, and my Rosh Yeshiva, blessed memory, said you have to do it for your whole life, not just when in yeshiva, at least 10 minutes a day. And he said that he used to say the greatest Yetzer Hara in the world, is not to learn Musar. Because he said Musar like sticks the Yetzer Hara right in the eye. Like from learning Musar, it brings you to all different kinds of realizations. The Mesillas Yesharim says, so I've heard other Rabbanim say, the greatest Yetzer Hara in the world is not to learn Torah. Just not to learn Torah. So my Rebbe said, within learning Torah, the greatest Yetzer Hara not to learn Torah is not to learn Musar. Because that really sticks it to the Yetzer Hara in the eye. Yeah.
Are the melodies familiar to us? Or are they?
Anything,
difficult to
say. Let's say a person is working on his anger. It could be that he's weak and he's prone to anger, or it could be he's perfect with anger. But one time every 2 weeks he has a little emotion of anger. So he wants to have such perfection that he eradicates that also. So he says, Kol HaKoes Kol Mini Gehenim Sholtim Bo. The Gemara says, Kol HaKoes, anyone who gets angry, Kilo Avin Avodah Zarah. It's a Gemara thinking of Dharm. So he says, Kol ha-koeis ki lo-ved avodah zarah. But he says, Kol ha-koeis ki lo-ved avodah zarah. And he thinks what he thinks, Kol ha-koeis. So when he says it over with a melody.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
So then that becomes an emotional experience, just like music arouses the neshama. So he said the sound of person saying these words to a melody, he said that's like a liberation or an accessing of the neshama, the holy neshama, that by break through all the forces that rise against it and tell you that you should get angry. So this is like a voice saying, don't get angry. And that's a very powerful thing to do. You know.
When you walk into the kollel here, you'll often hear people chanting while they're saying words like that. Are they likely saying Musar, or are they saying something from the Talmud?
They could be. They're probably just, I don't know. But you know, people learn like that also. Omar Abaye, Yesh, Lamidas. You know, that. But that's a different thing. This is, there aren't that many, you know, at this point, you know, the Musar is not, as a rule, and I don't want to say anything about any yeshiva or any individual certainly, or any yeshiva certainly, you know, but as a rule, it's not that, how should you say, popular right now to learn Musar. I know in my yeshiva, they still take the whole thing quite seriously. You know, they have.
But a lot of Sudashli sheet drashas usually people prefer like a Musar kind of message. You
know? Yeah, that's a different story. See, that's the Musar program of Rav Yisrael Salanter was three part. One was Musar Bespiles, that they're learning something that's already known with a melody. Then there's a thing called Chachmas Musar. That means the knowledge of Musar, meaning to understand what makes a person tick. So that is like a drasha, like they have a term, a shmooze. So in the yeshivas, they used to have that the rabbi got up once or twice a week and delivered a lecture on these subjects. So to a certain extent, it was meant to be inspirational. But in the pure Musar tradition, It wasn't like one of these rabble-rousing, rah-rah things. It was just an intellectual discourse on a certain aspect of what makes a person tick, and what he should do, what the obligations are. And certainly in Slabodka, which was in its day, you know, perhaps at a certain period was the preeminent Musar Yeshiva. My tradition, the tradition that I have from my Rebbe, is from Slabodka. So there, the great head of the yeshiva used to speak, you know, like he was reading the news. You know, he tried not to emotionalize it. He wanted the people to understand the theory of it, and then the emotionalism came from their Musar Bespilus. And the third leg of this program was what they called chinuch hamusar, which is to act it out. That you have to do things that because of what you've done in musar, imprints it into your behavior. And he alludes to that also, because he says you should always think, when is there a time when I can fulfill it? Because if something is an emotional state, that's only emotional, it tends to come and go. My Rebbe used to say this, he quoted a Rashi someplace, and inferred it from a Rashi. Because if a person, let's say we always have these experiences, you become aroused, you know, it's Rosh Hashanah, you feel aroused, or you hear a certain drasha, somebody dies or somebody gets sick, you know, and you get touched by it and you say, I'm going to be good for the rest of my life. Then 3 days later, it's like it didn't happen. So my Rebbe used to say that in the moment that you feel this arousal, do something because of the state that you wouldn't have done if you weren't in the state. Like do something, like link it to some concrete behavior, and that puts an imprint of the experience into your into your personality in a way that it wouldn't otherwise. So, anyway. Sorry. Okay, so let's read a little bit here, okay? I don't think we read it all yet, did we?
No.
Okay. All right. B'chol boker, every morning, tikra b'picha, read, he says aloud. I don't know how he translates it, but it means read with your mouth. It means say it, okay. I don't know if it means aloud. Haremez hashayach oso shvua. The key word for that week. I mean, there's three steps. There's the chapter, then the parak, then he calls the piska, which is the sentence, and the remez is the hint. So you read just the hint. His whole system is you master the chapter and the sentence so well that you just say the word, it's evocative of the whole thing. So then you read that thing that's ready for that week, the tafsik ma'at, and you should pause a little bit. Bechdeus bonen, to think about ketzad lishtamish bo hayom, how to use it on this day. This is chinuch hamusar. This is to do something with this idea physically, act in a way as a result of working on this thing. V'acher kach tadaktek lachkor b'daitcha. Then you should think in your mind. How many things do you have to do that day? Now, it's very interesting. He says, once you think about this one concept that you're working on, then you have to think about what you have to do that day. Then you should be careful. To think in your mind. How many things you have to do that day? Hein b'mili d'shmaya, whether in things of heaven, hein b'mili d'alma, whether in things of, you know, worldly things, veltzachim, you know, practical, pragmatic things, business, whatever, money, you know. You have to think about your day. V'taruch l'cha hayom v'asoson b'seder nachon, and then you should arrange the day to do them in a proper order. V'meshech haroi l'chol echod v'echod mehen. And, you know, meshech, it sounds like how one runs into the other appropriately. Meaning that you do something and then you go to the next thing. You don't, say if you have 10 things, you don't spend forever on the first thing. Like at a certain point, you run from that to the second thing. Vaseder has a mamush, tia shokud achar kachel gomer. And in this exact order, you should be diligent about completing them. Chumishpat has a tasa b'chol yom v'yom. And that's what you should do every single day. What he's saying, I think, is that an orderly insertion of this. You know, excellence in this trait works best if your day is orderly. Say, if you know, like in the morning you have to write a letter, in the afternoon you have to work on a report, at lunchtime you have to meet with somebody, then you have to go pick somebody up with a car. So if you have that all planned out before, then you can contemplate where this thing might come up. Let's say if anger is what you're working on. So you know that the person you pick up with the car is a very annoying person, and when you deal with them, you find yourself getting all annoyed under your breath. So if you've thought about it before the day began, so you know, you see that this is where the day is going, and you think about how, with my newfound righteousness about this thing, I'm going to act differently when it comes to this fellow. But if you have no day schedule, and you just do whatever comes up, so it's much harder to plan the application of the thing that you're working on, because you don't have any forewarning. Does that make sense to you?
Sure.
I'm getting, okay. So it's interesting that his system of putting this self-improvement to work starts with having an orderly day. I'm sorry, I have to excuse me for 1 second.
Okay. I never did this. Okay. Sorry.
It keeps, I've been trying to scratch it.
Okay. That's what you're for there.
I've never done this. I've never done this before. Well, I don't think while I'm teaching something. Anyway, so... V'chol erev, now he's saying that. V'chol erev, on every night, kodem hashena, before sleeping, chazor l'achorecha, go back, or review behind you, meaning review the history of the past day that just passed, lahavchin, to figure out, b'meh b'lisa hayom hazeh, with what you used up that day. Like, what did you do to use up the time of that day? Kol esek v'esek, each and every activity, v'chol protosehen, and each of their details, z'achar zeh, this after that, keseder, in order, mibokar v'ad ha'erev, from morning to night. And I guess, it follows as well, that if you had a schedule that you adhere to, so it's easier to look back and see how you spent the time. If you're not a scheduled person, then it's much harder to go back and figure out what you did, because by the end of the day, you don't even remember. Whereas if you had a more rigidly outlined syllabus for each day, so you go back and review the syllabus and see how you did it. So then he says, now, but to those of us who are more orderly and made the day that way, then at the end of the day, you go and you look behind you to see how compliant you were with these 13 things that you're supposed to be working on. V'lonis kaimu machshov of miktsas mehen. And if your intentions were not fulfilled in some of them, miboker, since the morning, ten daitchol isbonein, focus your mind to focus. V'pnei malomus kaima. Why weren't they fulfilled? V'mira machmas ezatos. If, let's say, it happened because of some kind of mistake, now you're doing something wrong, you didn't realize something, if that's why it happened, azay tadakte ketev, here you should think very carefully, minayin boso l'kalatos hazeh, why did you come to this mistake? Like, I guess if you see that, this is like really talking to people, because people very often repeatedly make the same bad turn when they get to the same life situation. So he's saying, once you see that there's a bad turn, it's not enough to note it and make a record of it, but then you have to start thinking, why did I do this? He's talking about like a very orderly, systematic view of how the day goes by. V'tamash v'sishtamesh bo. And you should, like, I think, deal with it, like examine it, l'hayzchakem, to become wizened, made wise, meaning soyun zeh, from this test, l'yamim haboyim, achar kach, for the days that, miyam haboyim, for the coming days. Achar kach kum b'chapesh, then go and think. Then you should, I guess mistakes are, just bad things that I did. And you should think, because not all bad things are part of the 13 traits. So first he says you should see, did you make any major mistakes? Then he says, after, you should think about these 13 traits that you're working on. He says, you're always working on 13 at one time. Then you should make a note of it immediately. The eight shaloferis with the pencil, nekudaktano, a little dot, the pinkosecha in your notebook, boaruga hashaychel osliyom, in the row that has to do with that day. Uvamruba hashaychel osumida shavartolov, and in the quarter that has to do with this trait. Now it means quarter because each of the 13 things is done four times over the year because there are 52 weeks in the year. So it's like a quarter meaning the quarter of the year, the quarter meaning the four times a year probably means, or the fours, not the quarter, that has to do with this trait. If you repeated it and threepeated it, you did it a third time, this thing on that day, azai tishne, then you should review utishale shanakudos, then you should threepeat, it means like you do it a third time, the dots, bosom ruba, in that square, the mispar hachatoyim is the number of sins. And so with each one of the sins until conclusion. And so night to night, you do the same thing every night. Atom kol yemei ashua, until the week is over. So see, again, this is like talking about a pretty like orderly, carefully thought out person who's able to think back on the day at night only and go through the day in such a, you know, with such a sweep and such a you know, like a thorough once over of the day that passed, that he can say for each of the 13 traits when he reviewed them. It's very hard. I don't know, you know, like to me it would seem that, again, this is, you know, people were greater in his time. I don't know. It's a very hard thing to do.
But the only time you make a dot is if you transgressed.
You transgressed.
So, but does he have to think of each time that it became applicable, that particular trait?
Yeah. And then when it became applicable, there was a transgression, you put a dot. So that means that you go through the whole day, in retrospect, thinking on each of the 13 different things, like from 9 to 10 in the morning, from 10 to 11 in the morning, and so on. So I say, oh, number 8 I did at 11 o'clock. Number 6 I did at 11:20. Number 9 I did at 12. That's very hard.
It helps if you're a CPA, right?
Well, you know, it helps if you're a very dedicated Bal Mussar. But his point is that by doing this, then you save yourself the constant activity with it. But it's a very hard thing to do. Like, I don't know, you know. I saw Rabbeinu Yonah, and Rabbeinu Yonah has this. Rabbeinu Yonah lived much before him. He lived in the 1200s, the early 1200s in Spain. He wrote these great books on, you know, these famous works on tshuva. So he wrote, I think that you should do this kind of a cheshbon and nefesh three times a day. You do it once at the morning meal, once at the night meal, once before you go to sleep. Now, to me, that's a little easier. But his whole point is that he's coming up with an idea that's going to save you the time and effort that it takes to work on your personality. But I guess you somehow have to have the ability to concentrate on your day and keep this thing like parked in the back of your head at all times, so that every time you do something at, you know, 10:20. You make a mental note of it, so then at 11:20, before you go to sleep, you remember what you did at 10:20 a.m. on trait number 4. No, that's what he's saying you should do.
The Vilna Gaon must have done something like this in terms of assessing his time, because didn't he used to determine, yeah, like going into Rosh Hashanah, how much are your people, or how much time you
left. Right, right, right.
Which
right.
was minimal. But,
right, but the Vilna Gaon also knew, you know, his mental capacity was so incredible. You know, they say, you know, where they said, Rav Chaim Voloshin said, you know, they compared the Vilna Gaon to another great, one of the greatest people of the time. So they asked his primary student, Rav Chaim Voloshin, what was the difference between the Vilna Gaon and this person? This is a well-known thing. He said, the difference is, he said, the other person knew Shas like Ashrei. He knew the whole Torah like somebody knows Ashrei. He said, do you know Ashrei? He said, yeah. He said, say it backwards.
Wow.
He said, you can't say it backwards. He said, you have to stumble and stumble and stumble to say it backwards, even though you know it. So he said, the Vilna Gaon saw it, like it was right in front of his eye, and he could say it backwards or forwards or up and down, you know. That was the Vilna Gaon. That's how well he knew the Torah. So, you know, as a person that has that mental capacity, he can keep track of the minutes of the year. I'm not trying to discourage anybody from doing it, but it is a fairly formidable undertaking. It may be half success is also success. I don't know.
It seems like the process of this is almost as valuable as the outcomes. Like, you get as much mitzvah points for going through this process as you would the actual outcome, which would be to change your behavior, no?
I don't know. It's hard to say. I mean, I'm sure that Hashem rewards efforts to do good deeds. But if it's something that was doomed from the start, and you know, the fact that you tried to do something that was doomed from the start, there may not be that much, you know, that much regard in heaven for it.
Rabbi?
Yeah.
A lot of people at the end of the day make some sort of an accounting, and I'm thinking a lot of people like write in journals. And like, it would seem to me like that would be a really more thorough way. Like, suppose you lost your temper with someone. Just making a dot that 11:59, I lost my temper at the person who was serving me lunch.
Yeah, that's a different system.
Or is it like that, you know, this is why I was impatient, I was hungry, and I let it get the better of me. And
yeah, but that's only a very small fraction of what he's talking about. Because what that is that if you did something egregious,
yeah,
you know, something terribly wrong, so when that happens, which is not every day, you make a journal about it. You make a journal entry about it.
He says that?
No, that's what you're talking about. He's saying that throughout every minute of the day, you keep track of 13 different traits, and any violation of it, not something terrible.
Right,
like
mine is if something comes up that you notice,
but it's a serious thing.
Yeah.
Because little violations we do every hour. Little something, you didn't say hello to somebody nicely, you know,
would you write about that in your journal?
If he's talking about speaking nicely, if that's one of the 13 traits, like the Ramban says, you know, this is something you could work on. Ramban says, "Heaven midaber es kol adam benachas." It's called the Ramban says, "Heaven in the Igeres Ramban, heaven midaber es kol dvarecho benachas lechol adam uvechol es." Speak your words pleasantly to all people at all times. That's in the Ramban, the famous letter. Ramban. It starts with that. So, do you do that all the time? Do I do it all the time? No, I don't. You know, you don't. Nachas means like with friendliness and complete equanimity. So that, you know, there are people that speak like that at all times. I don't. So if I kept a journal of that, it wouldn't be one entry at night when I did something terrible. It would be, you know, 10 entries or 20 entries every day. That's what I'm saying, is that this is a very hard thing to do, especially if you're talking about 13 different things. You have to keep track of every minute for 13 things. It's just very hard. So I'm not saying it should not be done, but I am pointing out that what he is talking about is a very difficult thing. Now maybe a person could adjust it so it's more doable. Maybe, I don't know. I just don't know. You know, maybe... you see, with this kind of thing also, you don't want to throw the... You don't start saying, well, we'll tamper with the system because I'm not one to tamper with the system, except for what my Rebbe said, which is to include the positive things in there. I mean, that's what he told me. He said, you know, he said, in this respect, we don't follow the book. Our tradition is not to follow the book. I mean, I would recommend other changes, but I'm afraid to say it, at least to somebody else. You know, if I were doing it myself, I would make other changes. Because, I mean, to me, you know, keeping track of 13 things seems like a very hard business. Okay, maybe we'll just read one more paragraph.
I wrote down here. I've forgotten it.
Oh, you want to stop? Oh, it's already 9 o'clock. Yeah,
yeah.
We should stop.
I just want to say, it seems like that there's a whole, what's this word here? It's very much about self-awareness, you know, about being aware of yourself and always having a self-awareness.
Okay.